Okay. Hello again, Angelia Miller, Marist Collaborative. I'm also joined up here by my colleague, Mr. Julian Garrison on council staff, who has been a grateful sounding board and perspective as we work through this project. So today I will be presenting on the IRA 3.3 project, which is evaluating or looking at setting up a system for ecosystem component species. And so to begin, the project motivation, this project was born out of the acknowledgement that certain stocks are not anticipated to recover to levels capable of supporting fisheries due to regime shifts or other changes, and that the current perception of BMSY is much less than the understanding of historical levels. And so this project hopes to screen for stocks that fit this characterization with an added benefit that a screening tool might be able to support prioritization efforts between the council and NIMS to update stock status for those or other stocks with outdated or rejected assessments. Through this project, we aim to establish a screening process to evaluate species for their eligibility as an ecosystem component, which would provide a process for adapting management to ecosystem shifts and providing flexibility to the fishery, all the while maintaining data, resources, monitoring, and oversight. In establishing this process, the council will receive a guidance document that the council staff will be able to use and apply to species that are prioritized at the council's discretion. The draft document was included as a part of your binder mailing for this meeting. Beginning this project, there were four overarching questions that came up. For today, we'll focus on these first three. We'll briefly define what an ecosystem component is according to Magnuson. We'll walk through the proposed screening process that will be used to identify potential ecosystem components. And finally, we'll touch on how the council will designate and manage those ecosystem components. Your ask today is to then consider the methodology presented and provide feedback on the screening factors and the process. So first we start with our definition of ecosystem component species, which in Magnuson is defined as stocks that a council or the secretary has determined do not require conservation and management, but desire to list in an FMP in order to achieve ecosystem management objectives. Conservation and management is further defined in Magnuson, and I've paraphrased here because it is quite a lengthy definition, which I know you all don't want me to read through. But to paraphrase, it is a regulation. It's all the regulations and measures which are required to and useful in rebuilding or maintaining any fishery resource. We'll here after define or use full management under an FMP with all associated requirements pursuant to MSA. In terms of what it means to designate an ecosystem component, these species can be defined at the species or stock level or grouped in a complex. And again, the remainder of this presentation will be referencing it at the stock level. Designation would remove the requirement of the full management for annual catch limits, other reference points or accountability measures as defined by Magnuson. And the council may still adopt management measures within an FMP when it designates an ecosystem component. Some examples include spatial closures, incidental retention limits, requirements for monitoring and reporting, or protections for their role in the ecosystem. So now we'll walk through the screening process and kind of give you a bird's eye view of where this all fits in and how we're hoping the tool will support you all. You'll first go through your council priorities each year, and we'll need to include within your priorities an application of the screening process and the tool that we'll present here today. If the screening process indicates eligibility for designation, then the council will want to initiate an amendment to an FMP, which will again need to be set through its priority process. The FMP amendment could then include management measures for ongoing monitoring, and you'll repeat this process as you see fit. The screening process includes three overarching steps. We'll first evaluate the and score the need for conservation and management, which include two questions. The second step is to evaluate and score the 10 factors included under the National Standard Guidelines, which are non-exhaustive, deposited, are not required or dispositive. And then the third considers any additional information based off the council's request and as necessary. Each question within the screening process will receive a score based on the proposed criteria or thresholds that will be set based off a pilot screening. A score of 1 would indicate that it's not eligible for an ecosystem component designation, while a score of 0 would support an ecosystem designation. And then at the end of the process, after all the 12 questions are scored, a total score would indicate that eligibility. This was adopted by the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council, where they designated 6 species as ecosystem components using the scoring methodology. And they based their designations off of 4 criteria, including the retention for sale or personal use, the likelihood of overfishing, the stock status, and whether a species or stock is non-targeted. To investigate the thresholds for the respective questions, we'll use a set of case study stocks, which were selected to span a range of management considerations and dynamics to ensure that the process is robust to scenarios such as stock status, utilization rates, user interest, and management structures. We're not intending to designate any of the stocks on the list at this time. They are intended for demonstration purposes of the process and how it will work. And so for today, we will provide examples for Sandlance and Southern New England Mid-Atlantic Yellowtail Flounder. The first step is to evaluate the Magnuson criteria, the first question of which includes if the stock is overfished, subject to overfishing, or likely to be. And so for currently managed stocks, we'll use the NOAA determination of stock status. For Southern New England Yellowtail, that status is overfished and overfishing is not occurring. For unmanaged stocks or stocks with an unknown status, we're proposing to use the productivity and susceptibility analysis, which was developed by a NIMS working group. And for Sandlance, preliminary results of this analysis indicate that the stock has low vulnerability to fishing pressures and likelihood to become overfished. The second question for the MSA criteria looks at if the stock is predominantly caught in federal waters. And we're using the definition provided by NIMS in their revision to the NS guidelines, where predominantly caught is defined as mainly or for the most part caught in federal waters. And so on the right-hand side, an example of how this might be evaluated for Southern New England Yellowtail, we calculated the total catch in federal and state waters over the most recent 5 years and found the proportion of catch that occurs in the state waters. And then we'll compare this to the total catch of all other groundfish stocks that are managed within the FMP. Another source of data that we hope to use to support this analysis will be maps of fishing activity by 10-minute squares, as long as the confidentiality rule applies. The next set of questions are based off of the National Standard Guideline factors. And the first one here is if the stock is an important component of the marine environment. And so the main source of this data comes from the Center's Food Web Dynamics Program. And we can look at this slide here, the diet composition to characterize a stock's role as a predator on other species. So for Southern New England Yellowtail, on the left, we have a plot comparing the dietary overlap with other council-managed species in Sandlance. The x-axis running from left to right increases to 1, where 0 indicates no overlap in prey categories between yellowtail and the respective predator on the y-axis, and the 1 indicates perfect overlap. So at the top, a large yellowtail flounder has perfect overlap with a large yellowtail flounder, and moving all the way down to extra-large goosefish, which effectively has no overlap with large yellowtail flounder. On the right is the diet composition with the prey categories on the x-axis and the proportion of those categories that make up the yellowtail diet in terms of mass, represented by the black bars, and gray representing frequency of occurrence. We can also look at the frequency in which a stalk occurs in stomachs of predators caught on the trawl survey to assess its role as prey. So here we have an example for sand lance with the frequency of occurrence on the x-axis and the species that prey upon sand lance on the y-axis. We intend to apply the analyses presented on the past two slides for each of the pilot stalks. So while I didn't show an example on the last slide for sand lance or an example on this slide for yellowtail, both stalks will have predator and prey analyses applied. This analysis, along with other analyses considered under additional information, which I'll discuss later, will be used to define how to score this question within the screening process and indicate the stalk's importance to the environment. The second question looks at whether the stalk is caught by the fishery. NIMS provided guidance that the fishery is defined as one or more stocks of fish, which can be treated as a unit for the purposes of conservation and management. So we'll use this definition for unmanaged stocks, but extend that definition a bit further for currently managed stocks to the FMP fishery for which the stock is managed. On the right is a table containing an example of this analysis for both sand lance and southern New England yellowtail. We'll break out the total catch over the most recent 5 years by landed and discarded metric tons and calculate the proportion of total catch that is made up by landings. And we'll use the level of or proportion of catch to set thresholds for scoring this question and attempt to characterize levels of catch or bycatch. The third factor assesses whether the condition of the stock will be maintained by an FMP. So for the currently managed stocks, we'll use metrics out of the stock assessments, such as SSB, recruitment, survey indices, or fishing mortality. An example for yellowtail is on the right-hand side of the slide with data pulled from StockSmart and the most recent 2025 assessment. The top panel plots the age one recruits over the time series prior to 1980, and the bottom plot includes the spawning stock biomass estimated over the time series. The orange line represents when the stock was added to the FMP, and the blue line represents the trend or the change in that respective metric over the most recent 10 years. For unmanaged stocks, we'll use qualitative and quantitative information about the condition of the stock, examples of which I'll again go through a bit later. The fourth question assesses if the stock is a target of the fishery. Again, using the definition of fishery as described on the previous slide provided by NIMS. And we define a target stock here as a stock making up the largest proportion of a single trip, which was recently adopted by the Pacific Fishery Management Council in their 10-factor analysis, which is linked here on the slide. Demonstrated on the right is an example of what that might look like for sand lance and yellowtail, comparing the number of targeted trips based off of this definition, the total catch in those trips, and the number of non-targeted trips and their respective catch. The thresholds of scoring will be based on the proportions of catch in a single trip as well as the trips that were targeted. Factor five looks at whether the stock is important to the commercial and recreational or subsistence users. And to score this question, we'll use a proportion of total commercial revenue and total recreational. There's a typo on my notes. We'll use the total commercial revenue and fishery engagement measures. And then for unmanaged stocks, we'll use a proportion of kept fish for personal use or bait. Again, example on the right for southern New England yellowtail includes the revenue per trip that caught yellowtail at the top and per vessel on the bottom over the most recent 5 years and adjusted for inflation. The sixth question looks at if the stock is important to the nation or the regional economy. And importance here we're defining as the commercial as having commercial landings and revenue being generated by the stock at the top ports for the FMP fishery or for New England as a whole. So an example table on the right where we calculated the total landings of all groundfish stocks cumulatively excluding southern New England yellowtail at the top ports listed in the affected environment of framework 69 and the total inflation-adjusted revenue those landings generated. We followed that same method for southern New England yellowtail, but you may notice that the ports are not the same, and that is due to the minimal or lack of landings and revenue generated at those top ports. Southern New England yellowtails most notably landed in Point Judith and Stonington, and other ports includes all other ports that were aggregated to protect confidentiality. The seventh question discusses if the FMP will resolve competing interests and conflicts among users, and the scoring will be based in the qualitative information gathered by the plan development teams. So here I've included what that information might look like, and for Sandlands we reference the Staudinger et al. 2020 paper, which noted no large-scale fisheries targeting Sandlands and the potential for negative impacts on the available habitat to the stock. And for southern New England yellowtail, we reference the information from the 2023 Research Track Assessment stakeholder meeting, where industry members noted that the stock is no longer economically viable and are generally avoided to persecute more desirable stocks. Question 8 assesses the economic condition of the fishery and if the FMP would produce efficient utilization. Here we define fishery for all stocks based off the guidance from NIMS during the national standard revisions. And we score this based off of trends in fishery indicators for currently managed stocks and trends in kept and discarded fish for unmanaged stocks. Again, an example on the right for yellowtail, where we plot the total adjusted revenue generated over the most recent 5 years, represented by the points, and the change in generated revenue over time, represented by the blue line. The ninth question, the penultimate question in this process, is whether there is needs for a developing fishery that the FMP could foster. And this will only be evaluated for unmanaged stocks, noting that many of the stocks that are already in FMPs have a developed fishery. The score for this factor is based on trends in fishery indicators such as total number of trips and catch based off where the fish was landed. And an example for Sandlands here is presented on the right at New Bedford ports, where we plot the total number of trips on the left panel and the total catch on the right panel over the most recent 5 years, and the change in those metrics over the same time period represented by the blue line. The final question of this process includes if the stocks are adequately managed by states or other state and federal programs. And so this, again, describes qualitatively other state programs and regulations to score the factor. Examples for Sandlands include trip limits out of the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council through their unmanaged forage fish amendment, Massachusetts and Rhode Island, requirements for commercial bait licenses out of Connecticut, and prohibition by respective gears out of New Hampshire. And for yellowtail flounder, we've included examples such as trip limits out of Massachusetts and Rhode Island, spawning closures and gear restrictions out of Maine, and size limits out of Connecticut, Maine, and Rhode Island. The final part of the process includes considering additional information. And so for this portion and for our pilot, we've included some examples we're planning to use, including species distribution models that estimate the habitat niche of the stocks by relating the observed absence or presence or the counts of individuals to environmental variables. And so for the managed docs, we'll use the EFH models, which you heard about yesterday from Mr. Garrison. And for Sandlands, we've been graciously provided support by the Fisheries and Climate Toolkit team out of San Diego State University, who have modeled habitat suitability for Sandlands, seen on the right. These three plots compare habitat suitability for Sandlands in a contemporary period, the far left panel, to a future period in the middle panel, to derive a change in habitat suitability on the right. Using the screening process, we will work through more examples for the stocks listed on the earlier slides to demonstrate how the process works and how the council might designate and manage an ecosystem component if it is found to be eligible. So for today, you're receiving the update to the screening process and the overall project and providing feedback on the factors or data being used to assess those factors. In December, you will consider whether you would like to apply the screening process to the stocks of your choosing. And in further detail, what that might look like with the IRA project at the top is we'll test and review the screening process following that. The review today and later this summer, early fall, by the Climate and Ecosystem Steering Committee. The council will set its priorities to apply the process if it desires. The PDTs will apply the screening process and review with the respective APs and committee. If the process indicates eligibility based on the total score across the 12 questions and in consideration of the additional information, the council must then define a priority to add the stock to an FMP as an ecosystem component. The PDTs and councils will then follow its usual amendment process following the screening process, but allowing for more in-depth quantitative and qualitative discussion and expert opinion by those groups. And that is all I have today. So any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Miller. As I go out to questions and you think about your thoughts about this, I just want to remind folks that we want to really focus on the approach. While we did use Southern New England Yellowtail and Sandlands in here, these are just examples. This is not the process, how we're going to move forward specifically to those stocks. But just focus on what you saw and what do you like, what don't you like, what kind of feedback can you give to Ms. Miller. And as she pointed out, you know, the council under the IRA projects would like to think about considering moving forward this in 2027 as a priority. So the more information we can get now, the sooner we can get this project up and running and helping us move forward in the future. So with that, I will turn to Ms. Griffin and then Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Chair. Leah, thank you for the presentation. Could you go to the slide where you were going through the state regulations? Okay, so the intent here is kind of to get at what is already being done by the states. Clearly you've got, from my state, the trip limits on yellowtail. I'm just curious, how did you go about building this list? Were you talking directly with state?
Yes, thanks for the question. So we started with the information out of the review component in EFH of the state programs as a source of where to gather the information. And then specifically for this slide, I've visited the websites with all of the regulations for the states.
I think it might be good to have direct conversation. So depending on what the scope of what is adequately managed, right? So you have a trip limit here. But we have, gear-specific closures and things like that that can affect effort and other things that you might not be pulling out directly as a yellowtail regulation. So I think for this type of stuff, to get a better understanding of maybe how a state's regulations could be impacting a certain species, I think it would be helpful to have that more, you get more subtlety talking directly with some folks.
Thank you for that. Ms. O'Dell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for the presentation. So I, just thinking through, I'm going back to the draft material that's in our, not the presentation, but the actual document. Okay, so the guideline factors, I just wanted to say that is the stock a target of a fishery is one of the questions that you had up. I don't remember which one it was. And I just, you know, I think there's other questions that are in here that are asked, such as is the fishery important to the nation or the regional economy? Is the stock important to the commercial, recreational, or substance users? There's other questions that are also relevant in here, but I just want to remind folks that many of our stocks are not necessarily target, but could be considered, you know, incidental catch that still have economic importance to the fishery. And I wouldn't want that to get overlooked in any way. So, and just remind me again of the process of these factors would be under, I know we're working on an IRA project, but just now that we've gone through the risk policy scoring and weighting and had that discussion, how would this process, once we go through the factors and we agree on the factors, would this be something, who would determine which stocks we would move forward with an ecosystem component, and would we go to the advisory panels on the various FMPs where some of these stocks may reside before having any of those discussions?
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you. So Ms. Miller's slide that kind of showed that looping process that we have. So as she described, this is what we're kind of calling like a screening. And Mr. Peros had a good analogy. It's like when you go to the doctor's office and you have to fill out that sheet while you're in the waiting room before you go in and have a physical and get a diagnosis. This is like that sheet. So this process allows the council to look at, you know, does a stock even fall within the realm of consideration for ecosystem component? Then there would need to have a priority setting process. Do we want to look at it? Which stocks would we want to look at? That would be part of the priority setting process. And then it would go through a normal council action. So it would have technical input from our plan development team and partners, and input from AP committee around, you know, it may meet all of the screening criteria. Council might say, we don't want to take this out of the FMP, or we don't want to add this to the FMP. So it would go through the normal process.
Thank you.
And just to focus, I think you have the wrong slide up. I think it was slide 10, that loop that you were talking about.
No, it was this one. Like the council action process.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw two loops on my presentation. Sorry. Further questions, comments, input? Ms. Braun.
Thank you very much. This all sounds reasonable to me, but I do have another, I'm confused again on one issue. On slide 12, I don't necessarily have to go to the slide, but I'm looking at the scoring. Is the stuff for the stock status, how would stock status impact whether or not one of these is going to be considered an ecosystem component? I can see reasons in which, like, well, it's, for there's so little of it, we don't need to worry about it, and then there's so much of it, we don't need to worry about it. So how does stock status impact this?
Yes, great question. So stock status within the process is looked at the first question, so I'll just scroll back to the, so we can see it. So stock status is considered here. It's the first question as to whether the stock's overfished, subject to overfishing, or likely to be. So if the stock is overfished and overfishing is occurring, that would not support potential designation. So that would receive a score of, I believe it's one. And then if the stock is not overfished and overfishing is not occurring, that receives a score of zero, which would support a potential designation.
I have additional questions that I'll follow up later, because I think I'm probably the only one confused on this one, so thanks.
I thank you. Attorney McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point about the stock status being of an overfished fishery or one that's overfishing, it's getting a similar score to other factors, that particular factor you're giving a zero or one to, when the guidelines state that if there is an overfished fishery, it requires conservation and management by the Magnuson-Stevens Act. And so it then says beyond such stocks, the council may then consider those for ecosystem component species and going through that 10-factor list. So it seems that that is a funneling mechanism versus a weighting mechanism. If a stock is overfished or overfishing is occurring, it requires conservation and management and may not be considered with those other factors for purposes of adding it as an ecosystem component species. So I think that I'm curious as to why it's getting the same sort of weighting score that the other with the other factors when the guidelines say that the first screening is whether it's overfished or whether it requires conservation and management.
Thank you. Yeah, that is something that we've deliberated over internally quite a bit. I think in terms of this being that screening process, it is sort of that funneling mechanism, and so we wanted to weight everything equally to kind of help more with the prioritization. And so if we wanted to run the stock through all of it, because if it is overfished or subject or experiencing overfishing, then that will come out in some of the other factors as well. And so it would still lend itself to not being eligible for designation.
Mr. Pentney.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I guess I kind of agree with that approach. I think, you know, we have to be somewhat maybe flexible in looking at this, or not flexible, but like looking at the full picture holistically in terms of what's going on with a particular stock. And, you know, what is the implications of an overfished determination or overfishing determination related to the fishing effort, landings, discards, things like that. I think, you know, this is going to be something that's going to be a challenge for the council and for the agency to work through in a meaningful way. And I think I want to keep the options open for the council to deliberate on these stocks that and not just, you know, make a binary choice at the very beginning before we really look at the full picture as Angelia has described. So thanks.
Dr. Hare.
Thank you. And sort of following up on Mr. Pentney's comment, and I may have missed it in your presentation, so if I did, I apologize. Do you look at the fishing mortality rate relative to, you look at spawning stock biomass and you look at those factors. Are you also looking at trends in fishing mortality rate?
Out of the stock assessment?
Correct.
Yes, we do intend to look at that. I did have a plot, but in terms of time and we chose not to include that in the slide deck, but
that would be part of the consideration. So if your fishing mortality rate is decreasing or is low, that could sort of go to Mr. Pentney's point that it's useful to look at, even if it sort of to Mr. McDonald, Attorney McDonald's, like it doesn't get through that first hurdle, but a fishing mortality rate is extraordinarily low, continue on with the scoring. Okay, thank you.
That's correct, yes.
Thank you for that. Mr. Pearnock and Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, and thank you for your presentation. For this example, you take the sand lance and you're specifically looking at yellowtail flounder. How does it take into consideration then that outcome with the fact that sand lance is critical forage fish for multiple other species and cumulatively being eaten by multiple other species? When you do this evaluation, it's almost like I guess it's just single species predator-prey relationships. It's not cumulative. Am I reading this correctly or incorrectly?
To clarify, is your question about the slide on the screen or about the first question as its importance to the marine environment?
Well, there's no doubt that it's important. Forage fish, I've seen it for years, and I've seen it cycle and come and go for natural reasons as well as other reasons. Well, I'll get into it in a second, but it seems as though for this, you're just looking at yellowtail flounder. Is there enough sand lance for that stock? That's where I find a disconnect. There's other fish eating accumulatively that could impact that population of sand lance.
So you're referring to this plot of the frequency of occurrence of sand lance as prey? Is that your question? Or?
Dr. O'Keefe?
Thanks. Mike, just to clarify, so the yellowtail flounder example and the sand lance example are separate. They're each gone through each step of the screening. There's not an intent here to link sand lance to yellowtail. We're doing this presentation gave a full example screening of sand lance. And the reason for that would be that we might propose management measures for sand lance. We currently do nothing. So we're going in the direction I think you'd like us to go. So yes.
No, thank you for that clarity. That's positive. Is there a temperature component of this? Because when you look in the gut and when me or others may see when there's sand lance that are in these different fish, it's based on temperature when they arrive in a certain area, and then I'm going to find them in mackerel, I'm going to find them in groundfish, stripers, bluefin, you name it, and they're going to be spitting out typically because there's so many of them. So do you have in your criteria, in addition to what you found in the gut, what the temperature is to see that there's a corresponding relationship? Because it could be misinterpreted that, you know, there's not enough of them there because the temperature's not right. Or there's a cycle. There's a cycle, too, and I saw for years there's a cycle out at Stellwagen that some years you don't see them, some years you do. And then last thing is slide 18. I just want to note that it's been the observation for me, and I believe Andy would add to this, those fish in, you know, south of the Cape and the islands where the wind turbines are located, that the pounding to put in the base, they hunkered down, and every other groundfish did. Now, what happened with, you know, some other species, but that activity impacted them when that occurred. So, and slide 18, it doesn't really note that, but I just want to note that. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Ms. O'Dell, and then I have Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the discussion that just took place on, you know, stock status determination and what stock may be considered or what would qualify or maybe not qualify in terms of that for under Magnuson for an ecosystem component. I know we discussed this at our April meeting where Mr. Petney, I had asked a question about accountability measures, if there's any, you know, if a stock would be subject to accountability measures. I think it's just and there was clarification that likely not, unless there was some evaluation later on that management needed to change. But I just want to make sure that we keep that in mind, that there wouldn't, as we go through this process and decide how to move forward on this, just to make sure that there aren't any Magnuson accountability measure issues that we may come across at a later date. I just wanted to get that on the record.
Thank you for that. Mr. Smith and Mr. Pentney.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to also follow up on the stock status question. I appreciate the interest in running through all 10 of the screening tools and treating stock status as one amongst equals, and understand Mike's comment about not wanting to have this be a binary process. But my understanding from listening to Mitch, it actually is a binary question. According to Magnuson, if it's overfished or subject to overfishing, it requires conservation and management, and that it could not be designated as an ecosystem component because of the stock status. So I heard a couple of different things there. Can we get some clarification on that question? Because it seems fundamental to me and to this process, and I heard two different things there. So any clarification on that would be appreciated.
Mr. Pentney.
So it's difficult to give a specific, completely clear and consistent answer, but I'll try to help. Mitch accurately described what's in the guidelines, but they are in fact guidelines. And so what I would encourage the council to do is to use the guidelines to inform, and you know, the process, and to look at the holistic perspective or holistic view of particular stocks that the council would consider making a determination that it could be a ecosystem component stock, and evaluate the implications of that. And it's possible, and I'm saying I'm open to this conversation, it may be possible to come up with a rationale for moving a stock to an ecosystem component stock, ecosystem component determination, looking at the full picture. And I think part of that full picture would be, what do we expect management to do? And what, you know, what is our past experience with managing some particular stocks? Now, that may be, you know, a challenging hurdle to overcome, but I think it's a hurdle that's worth taking a look at and having conversations, you know, amongst the council, amongst our advisory panels. I'm certainly willing to talk with my leadership about different approaches that councils might take to deal with some of these issues. I also note, and the reason I asked to speak was just to remind everybody that making a stock or declaring a stock an ecosystem component stock does not mean no management. It can mean prohibited possession. It can mean subject to a possession limit. Mid-Atlantic Council is a great example. Their forage fish amendment is entirely ecosystem component stocks, and there is a possession limit collectively for all of those forage species that are identified as ecosystem component stocks in that FMP amendment. There could be other measures that are implemented that you know, serve to constrain or control fishing mortality on particular stocks, but the ecosystem component designation means there's not ABCs, there's not ACLs, and therefore there's not reactive accountability measures. But it allows the council to still take action that might be appropriate given the circumstances of the stock without the sort of annual or, you know, every few year actions to actively manage the fishery.
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thanks, and I just wanted to give a shout out to Dr. Hare, who has offered some assistance of center staff in specifically looking at yellowtail. And there was research track assessments that went on for yellowtail that recognized that fishing was no longer a driver of stock status. And so, following Mr. Pentney's comments, you know, what can the council do in a situation like that if measures that we try to put in place are ineffective at ever getting out of an overfished condition? It kind of becomes this difficult circular loop that we're in. So I appreciate Dr. Hare's support of this. I appreciate Mr. Pentney's support of this. I do think it's challenging, but I hope the council can stay open-minded. I think this might be an opportunity to get us out of some of the really challenging situations we've had with choke stocks and rebuilding plans. Thanks.
Mr. Lucy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I kind of see this as an opportunity to not spend time on a situation that was just described, so we have some more resources to maybe address some of the smaller fisheries like Mr. Plass was talking about earlier. And, you know, on its face, it seems like we're just going to drop these, but as was just pointed out, there's still going to be plenty of conservation measures that we're allowed to take. So I agree we need to keep an open mind on this. But one question I had is when you did your regression on those examples, you just looked at 15 years. And if you go back to the 80s, these were really strong fisheries. And I remember as a kid, you know, people loading up on flounder. So what's the mechanism? What's the trigger? How's the process work that, let's say, we get a giant regime shift and things flip around, when do we consider going back to an FMP for a fish, for a stock that may become economically viable again?
Thanks. That's a great question, and also something that we've talked about very frequently internally. And so I think the benefit of this tool and designating ecosystem components is within your amendment development, you could include those triggers as management measure alternatives, as well as required monitoring, which, as Mr. Platts shared in the beginning of the meeting on Tuesday, that the MID has their unmanaged fish reports that they receive annually. So you could include that as a requirement upon your amendment development. And when those triggers are hit, that would then elicit a response to either go through the screening tool again or look, just skip the screening tool altogether and more in depth look at whether or not that stock needs to be added back to the FMP.
No further comments.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Perrinock.
No, thank you. Thank you. One last clarification. Using this as the situation is overfishing not occurring. With the national standards, and if you're looking at this, does it take into consideration the health of the fish? Because the fat content of that fish may not be such, and it may be as fatty or lengthwise, may not be there because there's not enough forage. Is that part of the equation or separate to that? Because there's multiple species I can look at, from bluefin to groundfish and in between, and the fat content isn't what it used to be because of lack of a select forage that would result in such. And the last thing I forgot to mention, getting back to that one slide, Stellwagen Bank National Marine Sanctuary has a study that's being conducted by UConn to look at the impact of EMF to sand lance. So it's been funded through the state of Massachusetts, and it's ongoing right now. So there's some more science we can rely on and see whether the electrolysis is impacting the sand lands.
I'll close out council discussion on this. I think you did a really good job here. This is a very in-depth process that you developed. You know, major over objectives, and you know, it's very specific questions. You did point out some of the concerns going forward with this is that we're going to be doing some stocks that are now becoming rare occurrences, and you talked about the confidentiality component. Obviously, in one of the slides, you talked about having to roll up catch data, price data to higher ports, aggregating ports. You did mention you had concerns with some of the plot information that you're going to do, in potentially 10-minute squares. I would recommend, if it's possible, going to a larger square, like a 30-minute square. I know stat area is not ideal, but, you know, having something to look at as opposed to, well, we can't show you because this is all confidential. So I would just make that as a recommendation. Anywhere there's confidential information, try to roll it up to as high as possible so we can actually get something to debate on that. With that, I will go to the public. Is there anyone in the room that would like to comment or have questions on what has been presented for the ecosystems component species analysis? I will go to Dr. Fuller online.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Miller, for the presentation. Erica Fuller speaking on behalf of Conservation Law Foundation. I wanted to start with saying that we appreciate the Council's work to better understand how ecosystem component species designation could be used within current management. Developing clear criteria, thresholds, and information needs will be valuable, particularly where this designation could support ecosystem-based management. An ACE species designation may be a useful tool, particularly for a species like sand lance, which is important prey for a variety of predators, doesn't otherwise have the benefit of federal management, even if arguably it probably should. I note, however, that an ACE designation is purely a creature of the National Standard 1 guidelines. These words and this term are nowhere to be found in the Magnuson-Stevens Act, and cannot and should not be used to avoid statutory obligations or to reduce management responsibilities. In a changing ecosystem and with federal support systems facing increasingly constrained resources, uncertainty should reinforce the need for precaution and accountability, not just stepping back from management. As the Act makes clear when it defines conservation and management, these measures must be designed not just to avoid irreversible or long-term adverse effects on fisheries, but also on the marine environment itself. We understand that the list of species under consideration was chosen mostly to assess the decision framework, but its potential application is concerning. The large majority of species listed definitely need conservation and management measures, and would have these management measures would have to be removed from their current FMPs. There's staff time and costs associated with removing these measures that likely outweigh any perceived benefits. In addition, it shouldn't be applied where conservation needs are uncertain or unresolved. Just because a species is hard to assess doesn't mean it doesn't need conservation and management. And finally, where a stock is overfished and subject to rebuilding obligations, this designation is simply not appropriate. Of the 10 species on this project list, fully half are overfished, including Atlantic wolffish, witch flounder, southern New England, mid-Atlantic yellowtail, thorny skate, and red hake. Cusk is being considered for an ESA listing. The Magnuson-Stevens Act is clear that overfished species must have conservation and management measures that rebuild the fishery in as short a period of time as possible with certain considerations met. Overfished species are simply not suitable for EC designation. And to wrap up, we support the Council's continued exploration as a potentially useful tool, but only if it is applied narrowly, cautiously, and consistently with the Magnuson-Stevens Act. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Dr. Fuller. Ms. Shields.
Thank you. Allison Shields with Environmental Defense Fund. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. And thank you, Ms. Miller and Council, for all the work you have done on this to date. We submitted a letter last week that's included in the binder, but I want to just follow up on the conversation around the overfished species. First off, I agree with everything that Ms. Fuller has said previously, and also want to emphasize that ecosystem component species can be a helpful tool for promoting ecosystem-based fisheries, but we agree that only they should only be used in certain circumstances. While the National Standard Guidelines are just guidelines, Magnuson does still require conservation and management measures to prevent overfishing and rebuild overfished stocks. And that means that overfished stocks and stocks subject to overfishing need conservation and management and should not be EC species. We hope that the Council stops consideration of such stocks at this time and doesn't spend any more resources on this stock, on this topic than is necessary. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Shields. Any further comments from the public? Well, thank you, Ms. Miller. We appreciate the work that you've put in. I see Julian was with you, so I'm sure Julian helped you out there. Thank you to the both of you. You've done a great job, and we look forward to as this moves forward. With that, I will go to Dr. O'Keefe for Council Planning.
Great, thank you. Just want to start by saying thanks, everyone. This was a really busy meeting, and it looks like we are going to finish just about right on time. Thanks for staying engaged, and thanks for being adaptive and flexible. There were a lot of changes made to our scope of work for the year that I appreciate everybody's kind of getting on board and supporting that. So next slide, please. So here is your updated outlook now. I'll just run through the same slides that we had at the beginning of the meeting, but some things have obviously changed. We finished risk policy, and congratulations to everyone on that. Really appreciate it, and this is going to be a new way of managing that we're all excited about. Holistic strategic plan, Jonathan provided an update at this meeting, and we are intending to have approval of the final plan, the implementation plan, and our outreach strategy in September. To support this, we'll be convening an XCOM meeting this summer specific to this topic. Other topics that we'll be dealing with as we move forward regional stock prioritization is the new term for the risk value matrix. So that national level endeavor was suspended, but we are continuing with our regional prioritization. We should have a report for the council on that in September. We will have an intersessional NRCC meeting this summer to review the results. The ecosystem component process that Ms. Miller and Mr. Garrison just presented, we will be considering that in December in our priority setting process. Vessel baseline evaluation, Dr. Feeney provided an update at this meeting. We will get the report from the evaluation, that working group, in September. And again, that will be consideration for December priorities. And Inflation Reduction Act initiatives, we plan to give kind of a more lengthy update at our February 2027 meeting. That will be the final year of the award, so we'll let everybody know where we are, what we plan, and how we're going to wrap those up. Next slide. Into our FMPs, groundfish. So we received the redfish sector exemption review at our April meeting. That's on the list for consideration in December for priority setting. The Amendment 23 review report we received from Mr. Grant at this meeting. We plan to follow up with the committee later this fall to complete the full documented report and go through a little bit more time with the presentation, allow for more questions. That also would be under consideration for 2027 priorities. Framework 68, our ABC control rule, we received an update at this meeting. Council decided to delay the timeline on that, so we will have an update again after we have taken final action on this year's work. We'll have an update in February. We're targeting April for final action on a new control rule. Framework 74 is a bit more streamlined now. You set the scope at this meeting, initiated the action. We'll have an update in September, targeted final action in December. And per our normal schedule, we will do recreational measures at our first meeting in 2027. For scallops, we received an update on the status of the fishery at this meeting and an update on what would be included for specifications for fishing year 27, default for 28. We'll have an update on that again in September with final action in December. Council decided to split off the other measures that were identified for work priorities this year, so sub-area management in the Northern Gulf of Maine and regional allocation of days at sea. And so now we will have an update on that, those initiatives in February with targeted final action in April. And we received an update on the projection methods contract. We'll receive another update on that next spring after it's been delivered to the plan development team. Next slide. For monkfish and skates, we had the feedback on the listening sessions that occurred after our April meeting between April and May. For herring, we also kind of decided to split, so we got an update on the specifications. We are targeting final action in September to meet our fishing year start of January 1. Just another encouragement to pay attention to next week's stock assessment peer review. Monday, Tuesday is Georges Bank, haddock, and Atlantic herring. We split off the river herring and shad management measures, so we did initiate a framework for that. We don't know if that's actually going to be a framework or an amendment, but we initiated the action, and we're targeting final action for that in April. For small mesh, today we initiated an action. We set the scope for that to include specifications as well as potential modifications to some of the possession limits and allowance of species and changing their possession limits. We'll have an update in September, final action in December. And finally, for habitat, we received an update on the 2026 essential fish habitat framework. We are targeting final action in September. And we received an update on the scope of what will be included in the Great South Channel Clam Exemption Review. We're shooting to have that report completed and delivered in September. Next slide. So here's what we have coming up for September. More updates than decisions in our September meeting. We'll get some more reports, and we're looking to take three final actions. December will be a much busier meeting. There'll be a lot more final actions. So September, we will try our best to provide as much information as we can, kind of that halfway point before we take final action. And I just want to note, I've been keeping a running list of all the things that are being discussed as potential 2027 priorities. That list is already like into 2030. So I'm just giving an early warning that the priority setting discussion, that we'll initiate in September and finalize in December. I think Mr. Platts has said it clearly multiple times, like, the council needs to really think about what you want to do. We cannot do it all. There's a lot of big ticket items. There's some small ticket things. So I'm going to try to circulate the list of the wish list a little earlier this year and give everybody some additional runway to think about where we are. And next slide, please. So this is it. Just wanted to let you know what's going to happen between now and the September meeting. We will continue U.S.-Canada transboundary management activities. We have the technical science coordination meeting on July 13th, and we will be standing up our industry advisory group for a kickoff meeting in mid-August. The IRA semi-annual grant report is due July 31st. That's always a good document that I can share out, and updates of where we are and what we've accomplished in the last 6 months on that. As I mentioned, the NRCC intersessional meeting in mid-August, which will focus on that regional stock prioritization. SSC will be meeting in mid-August to recommend hiring OFL and ABC, but they will also be following up on the dynamic reference points workshop that they had. And as I also mentioned, we will have the Executive Committee Holistic Strategic Plan meeting in mid-August. And I'm going to do a lot of gardening starting this weekend and not see you again until September. So thank you.
With that, any questions, follow-ups on the council planning for now through December? Actually, I think you had that due next April. Ms. O'Dell.
So very quickly, clarification, Monkfish Skates, the council priority has been completed for 2026. There will not be a committee meeting where they will discuss, priority setting. However, we have a long list from last year that I'm assuming probably will be brought back to the table for 2027 through the executive committee discussions as well as council discussions in September. How does that play out? We've received a lot of feedback, so I'm assuming there's a pretty robust list.
Well, there is last year's list that was considered last year, and one thing was selected that didn't move forward again this year. We went to the listening sessions, and the feedback, as Mr. Olszewski and Mr. Gates pointed out, there was not really a consistent message about what people wanted to do for either one of those fisheries in the short term. And so we have a requirement to do a spec setting cycle in 2028. Our staff is feeling a bit reluctant to go back out to AP and committee this fall to come up with another new list of things to do. I think the feedback we really heard from the listening sessions was there's real market concerns, there's protected species concerns. So the action item coming out of those listening sessions was that we are going to request to GARFO that the take reduction team, the harbor porpoise take reduction team, consider an analysis of those harbor porpoise measures, and potentially there would be a follow-on action from that. But that was the kind of one priority that came out of those listening sessions.
Mr. Platt.
Appreciate the chance to speak, Mr. Chair. I have to disagree with the conclusion from the listening sessions. As we saw, there was only one person here from small mesh fishery. I think monkfish and skate fall into that same chronically neglected category. And one of the realities of being in a chronically neglected fishery is you lose faith in the process and the system, and you just sort of drop out and quit. And I think that's the lesson that comes from the listening sessions, is that after 10 years of not managing the fishery, there's not much faith in the process anymore. And so people tend not to see a point in coming, just as we only saw one person here from small mesh. I think we have an ample list of priorities established by the advisors, and we actually have a really great group of advisors. It's a whole new generation. And we should use their suggestions from last year. And I don't think the solution to dealing with a highly neglected fishery is to neglect it for another 2 years. I think we should prioritize what they said. I very much regret what I did last December, in part because I was so disappointed by the paltry offerings of actions. But so I'll just put that out there that, you know, chronically neglecting fisheries produces crisis management. And if anything defines the way the New England Council has worked for the last 20 odd years or more, it's crisis management. I think we create it. And we should, as a consideration for priority, I was just thinking I'd send a letter to this extent, and I'm wrapping up here, Mr. Chair, but the length of time which a fishery has not been managed should be a weighted consideration for how much it needs to be managed now, so that we don't get into the situation where you have fisheries that are not managed for years upon years, because that really undermines the credibility and the belief in this process that we are a part of.
Thank you for that. Further discussion on where we're going? Seeing none. Thank you for that, Dr. O'Keefe. On to other business. I do have one item to note, and this is kind of old, but I assume the date is still correct. So the Gloucester Fishermen's Memorial will be having an honoring of the Lily Jean on August 8th. I just want to put that out on people's radar. I know this tragedy happened a few months back, but, you know, we just want to keep this on the radar for folks that are still want to participate in the memorial. So that would be August 8th down in Gloucester, up in Gloucester. Anyone else have any other business to bring to the table today? Seeing none, I want to thank you all again. Particularly, I want to send another special thank you to Peter, to John. We as a council, me, myself, do wish you the best of luck in your next endeavors. Hopefully, John, we don't see you back here in a couple years again. Peter, I know you're not officially retiring yet, but you're retiring from us, so we do wish you well in whatever avenue you go. And with that, I want to thank the staff. Once again, you guys always hit it out of the park. Here and back at home, those that are helping online, once again, you know, thank you all. And with that, hope to see you all in Plymouth in September. Thank you very much.